Everybody's presentation. No, I think it's good to be covered. It's going to play for a little while.
So let me have a lot
of fun. Now we just have to figure out what it means.
Yeah.
Well, it's
probably the other method. There's a push of all the same, right?
Should I add in this corner is the worst corner of the pattern, right? So I can be the one.
I think
it's okay. I don't mind sitting here. It's all right.
I think what you're saying. So we can go. I can say.
That'll work.
Oh, someone asked if the solo link is still be your personal main room, or
it's still, yep, it's still my room.
Okay.
Yep, they can use the same one. Yep, I'm here.
So,
yeah, so I always use the same for everything.
Very much.
I had a problem with the game. And some privacy.
You have some parallel things?
What?
We have some parallel things.
But then I'll use somebody else's room, yeah, to put another meeting.
That's one of them.
But then the real problem is when I'm hosting a meeting I'm hosting with a seminar or something goes over the other thing, and I have some other meeting on the same one, then that's a problem. And then I don't have a way of transferring like 50 people over that's an issue.
Yeah.
So that's the only problem that I have with these
islands.
Then I have to tell people that I have to move, that I have at the last minute, I have to move islands. Right. That's, but it only happens once in a while. I usually try to avoid putting meetings right after a seminar.
Right.
So ICML went okay? You proud of your paper?
Yeah.
Anybody else for ICML? Yeah, we had a few. We had a few in the lab, right? Nikhil managed when he started panicking about getting his paper ready. And I saw Karim working really hard. I don't know if he ended up sleeping. I don't know if you're following that at all. You're not in Karim's paper, right?
Why would it? I guess because Cole.
Yeah, it's a column. Yeah, he has to decide between Cole and.
The reviews will be out before Cole himself.
Oh, the first round reviews will be out? So maybe it's worth it.
I don't know what he did.
I don't know. I think Cole would be better room for him. But it's okay. Try it out. You know, if he was my PhD student, I'd tell him, relax, just go for Colum. But he's a master's student, so he's really worried about, like, making his resume look good for PhD. Like, every venue, he's got to try everyone. So, that's right. Yeah. I'm really happy with Kevin's paper, with the factory one. You got that one.
See another paper.
I'm just thinking about this for Denmark. Yeah, crazy. This is not the problem. We're going to get involved with you about so I have to make people sandwich or typically. So I haven't been from Dan. How many minutes we have? Are we supposed to start it? We're supposed to start it. Okay, so whose team slides are these? Team S. All right. Anybody else on here on Team S? Are you guys ready to present?
I'm not sure what they want to be on, but I can always find
if you guys are not prepared to turn that because you're missing the rest of your team, we can reshuffle the other thing. Let's see. Let me click on the next tab. So if your team is not here yet, that's okay. Zip. You're in some other random order. Who's this?
Me.
Team Excellent. Is Team Excellent here?
We're still waiting for.
Okay. Here we go. Zip. Another shuffle. Okay. Who is this? I don't see Jasmine.
Yeah, I don't. Jasmine's on this one.
Oh, Jasmine, are you guys ready to present?
M maybe not.
Maybe not? What's going on?
Okay, is there a team that's ready to present? How about we start from that?
Yes, better proposal. Team bias, team power. Any of these
We're
other
happy
teams?
to go and, yeah,
Okay.
sure. Yeah.
All right. So find your slides and present. And okay. So now what I'm going to do this time, go ahead, is I'm gonna put up a 9 minute timer for everybody. And so I didn't announce this in advance. So I apologize. But I'm just going to set a buzzer off at 9 minutes, and we'll say thank you very much, and we'll have a few minutes of discussion, and then so on. So I'm just gonna truncate you. So you guys allocate your time any way you want. It's not necessary that everybody speaks. It's okay, but 9 minutes, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. So we don't have a slide deck. We just like have a Google Sheet with some ideas about different data sets that we're composing. So we're just going to talk through a couple of the different things that we're dealing with and like some of the questions that are coming up. So the first one that we've been, so we're team power. We're interested in how models are kind of internally representing power, and then what you can do if you intervene on those representations. One thing that we were toying around with style sentences. So if you take a bunch of sentences,
Can you make the font really big on it so that we can see some of the sentences?
yes, where is
I just,
that?
yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, so
Oh,
okay.
that's fine. Oh, yes.
If you have some sort of sentence that this was asking Claude to generate a series of sentences at the end of the word power, remove the word power, feed it into a different model, and look at how the model activates. The sentences that we've been kind of playing around with do activate power in different models, so it will produce power. And so that was kind of like one starting place that we've been playing around with. There are like some, I don't know, basic issues with this kind of setup that we've been struggling with too. So, Arvita, if you want to talk a bit about.
One of the like things that may make the word power highly likely in the end is like the use of some words before it, like exercise. If you search exercise off with no context on Google, it may power. Or maybe different combinations like influence or other words that are somehow related to power. So we also have a data set of sentences with none of those synonyms. We haven't tested it, but maybe we can see it.
Yeah, let's wrap them up.
Yeah. There is still some words that may be related to power, like decision, but at least We can see, we can feel there is some sort of power here. For example, nobody left unfinished business. Well, then screened off the coming calls. They waited 3 hours before he arrived. It seems someone was in the examples, but does the LLM have that understanding of power as the view or not? It's one question.
Oh, nice.
And
He decided. Meeting will meet when she's available. Wow. That's a power move. Just a little. Don't be imaginative. That's the. I see. Well, that's interesting. How did you generate these sentences? So cool. Oh, just with that prompt. Just with that prompt. My favorite thing in spreadsheets is wrap mode. Put wrap on it, yeah. Oh,
Bye.
great. Yes.
The third thing that we were playing around with was non-LLM generated data sets, and whether or not there's some sort of more kind of like bespoke sentences that we could work with. Last time we were talking about different ways of kind of scoring power relationships within sentences and what we could do with that. We started pulling just some recent news articles and seeing if we could use that to generate sentences that have power relationships between individuals and come up with a close to ground truth score or some sort of external way of measuring power in those relationships, and then asking the LLM to generate the score. So, I'm happy to talk a little bit about that. Let's see if I can pull it from the plot. Oh, you're able to plot. Yeah, so this is kind of a tool for scoring the power of different things and sentences. It's called Riveter. I briefly mentioned it last time. And just as kind of a quick test, we like manually just copied over 10 recent AP news articles, and we ran this tool. And for like the most referenced entities, we were able to quantify the power score, which is not that surprising. It's like,
And so you've got high bar and low bar. What do those mean? I can't read the text.
Oh yeah, it's a bit small. So high bar means that entity has like more power, and low bar means it has less. So the recent news articles are about protests on the lawn. So like authorities have a high bar score, protests and demonstrations have lower. And we also ran this on just 1,000 AP news articles from 2019, got kind of a broader range of things. The text is probably too small here, but there are some common themes, like authorities, police rating high on the score, Republicans, things like that. And I guess,
Kind of content measure the power score.
yeah, so this tool is using a lexicon of verbs labeled by crowd workers for whether they like increase or decrease the power of the subject and the
It's based on analysis of the whole article, is that right?
yeah, so it's kind of just like it's not using a LLM to do the scoring. It's kind of based on that lexicon, but it is doing things like coreference for speech. So I guess the idea here is that this is a ground truth for feature probing. If we're trying to get like an idea of which neurons or which circuits are responsible for power, but we don't exactly know what we're going to be prompting the model to do. If it's like maybe identify high or low power entities and predict things like that.
Have people tried triangulating Riveter with an LLM's, assessment, like whether an LLM thinks that this is, more power or less power, and if it agrees with what Riveter would say, or even you could give a few examples of Riveter and say, how would you generalize and see if the generalization agrees with how Riveter generalizes. examples. I feel like there's an interesting question there. It's likely that LLMs understand how to read text better than a computer does, but the real question is like, oh, does it have? Can you calibrate it to the same sense of power? But it might be a useful tool if you want to generate more text or something like that. Then you could use a bunch of parameter or scored examples. Once you have a sense for the population.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has done that. There's.
Cool.
Do you get like scores for particular sentences or just averaged across context?
That's entity per article, right? Yeah, I think it's for entities. You can get it for individual sentences.
I guess I'd just be curious because like I see like China is really low power, but I would imagine in certain contexts it's a lot of power, and so I like.
Right. So you just averaged over 1,000 articles.
And these are pretty random, but they're from 2019, so there's COVID stuff.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh yeah, where'd you get those articles from?
Just the Hugging Face data set.
Nice.
There's like a big scrape of the users.
Nice. Interesting. Well, that's your 9 minutes. Any other last things in the last 10 seconds? Any comments or suggestions from people? Discuss. So they have a whole bunch of data here that they've played with, and so you suggested, oh, it could be useful for making a probe. What's this leading to for like a? Do you have a sense for what kind of research question you might want to? I gotta learn how to use this thing. Okay. What kind of research question? Your tools that you've played with so far are sort of suggesting that you might want to ask.
I can kind of hop in, but just to make sure I have it on. So sorry, we covered the generated sentences, right? The
Yeah.
differences. Yeah, okay. One, this goes back to Armina's experiment from the last time we presented, but one of the things, and when she generated those sentences, one thing we had discussed as a group was that. The pattern we saw originally was that the decision it makes pivoted in the last few layers. One research question would be like would be honing in on that kind of idea, saying, look, are there particular layers, are there certain decisions that seem to get subverted or altered? Are there that can help identify like are there layers of alignment? Are there hidden opinions that are relatively consistent? That's one that would be one research question. Yeah, sure.
I see, like a hidden subversion. So one of the things I'm a little worried about, but so I love that. It's such a cool story. I think I mentioned to you, like I'm not sure, like you can. I don't. So usually you want to triangulate your results when you have some innovative method, and if the main evidence you have is that the opinion was different at a certain layer from the opinion that it gives at the end, that's like one leg of the stool. But then people will ask you, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Like you're using the model in some way that wasn't designed to use. Is there a second leg of the stool or a third leg of the stool where you can say, ah, that's evidence of some other behavior or it matters because it shows up in this other situation? And so that's my concern about. I love the story. I think it's so cool. I'm just not sure what you're doing. So I don't want to dissuade you from it, but if you want to go that way, I want to encourage you to be.
Question. Well, because one angle we also said was that I assume either through if there are some activations, we can locate that which that would alter the decision downstream.
Sure.
Would that contribute?
Could be a second link. It could be a second link. I mean, it might be very closely related to the slaves, but it could be something. So you could say, oh, we hypothesize that the model has a concept of something, whatever, some aspect of power, that it processes, like that it's impolite to talk about power, something like that. And that it activates, uses this concept somewhere at layer 27. Or different layers of the model, and we have assessments for figuring out what layer it is. And we have an ability to turn off this inhibition, right? And maybe the third leg might be, and we notice that if we look at models that are trained one way and models that are trained a different
Oh,
way,
the instructor versus non-instructor.
they don't have the inhibition or something like that. Let's play, maybe that could be a third leg, right? So I think it's possible to make a tripod, right? But maybe there's something to explore. with more preliminary experiments before you really commit to it. That makes sense. Any other suggestions?
I really like, I mean, not a suggestion, just a comment. I like the implied power sentence. Like, I like those sentences that, like, power is not explicit, but you could sort of. And I wonder if you could, have like varying data sets for the different kinds of power you want to test for understanding, not for something that are similar to this, where like it's implied but not explicit. I like his thought.
Yeah, I like it too. It's like it seems like there's different types of power in here, probably, right? Do you like I wonder if it's so have you guys considered trying to sort through different conceptions of power or something the model has?
Yeah, we've been narrowing down on like specifically relational conceptions of power between two people. We haven't kind of filtered this for that. And thinking more in terms of there's a question of like the kind of like latent possibility of exercising power if you're in a position of power, and then there's the actual exercise of power. And those are kind of two distinct things as well. So thinking in that sort of relational context between two entities.
Interesting.
Within that can like go in kind of different directions. So we were thinking more about the kind of like diversity of context to make sure that we're picking up and the conversations we've had so far and haven't talked as much about like just relations.
Yeah, it sounds good. What? Yeah, that's it. Who's the next team?
Hey.
All right, Jasmine, how come you're remote today?
Just under the weather. Sorry.
I hope you feel better. Thanks for dialing in. Is your team ready to present?
Let me ask them. I'm not sure. Okay, so.
Who's ready for that? I can put you guys up on the screen. If you're not,
Oh, I think maybe a pass for today if it's all right.
okay. You want to, should we? Are you on our team?
I could just go through my slides.
Are you on Team TK?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Why don't you go through your slides, Jasmine? We'll have Arya.
Is that fine?
Yeah. No, Arya's great.
Oh,
Yeah.
see you. I don't know
Yeah,
Go
she.
for it, superstar.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. I don't.
She's there. You know what she looks like.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Very small on the screen. I forgot to put the font sizes bigger, but anyway. For data set, I want to start off by like asking a question. Because I know this class is like mostly about identifying a concept, and like the guidelines we have for building a data set mostly focus on like if you have a concept, you this is how you do like the constructive pairs and stuff, all because you could demonstrate that you like have an item that has this concept and one it doesn't.
Right, for example.
But yes, for example, but like for ours, we were focusing on something slightly different than like you wouldn't think of it as a concept mechanism, like an algorithm of whatever thing, which makes constructing this data set kind of different from the
That's
guidelines.
okay. That's totally okay. That's all right. The guidelines, I mean, the real goal of the paper, or the real goal of the course is to like produce a piece of interesting insight about how these LLMs are thinking. And we have suggestions on how you might go about it, but if you have a clever different way, that's A plus. Okay,
I don't
great.
have a clever way. I
Okay.
just have a different way that might not work. But anyway, because our tasks were to just you catch up, people have a transcript that is undifferentiated by speakers, and then have the LLMs kind of attribute each sentences to like the corresponding speaker that spoke it. So in terms of like a data set, like an easier setup,
Nice.
We want essentially a discourse where you have to infer the speaker identity without like tags. And essentially, we need to have a question that's on the discussion within the dialogue so that we could ask questions that
I love it.
the interpreters would then operate on. And like the data items should be short. It wouldn't be like a full transcript. It would be something shorter because you, to make it not ambiguous, you cannot have the instances where a speaker just starts speaking. So like the next turn have to be like the current speaker must select the next speaker in some sense, either by referring by names or in like role setting of like if you have an interviewer and interviewee, the person who asks question, the person who answers, you would know who is like taking that role. But so anyway, there's a bunch of like nuances in there because there's a lot of things that you have to satisfy to make such data items solvable. In terms of like, for example, the logic must match, and like there's gonna be hints that you could take. For example, if someone asks the same question twice, and you already have someone answer it, the second answer would belong to a new person,
Sure.
like things like that. And like the interviewee is like an
I love
example of
it.
like role assignments that would help avoid this. And there's like implicit clues of like if you mention someone's name, you're talking to them.
So cool.
But so
Oh, so you have an example transcript here.
for data items, I'm separating it into like by levels of difficulties, starting with like a just labeled transcripts,
Can
which
you hit the present button to make the fonts a little bigger here? I'm
yes,
just
how do
curious to see
I
these.
this is really small because they're all JSONs.
Yeah, sorry.
Better?
Yeah, it's
Not really.
much better.
Okay. Yeah. Like this will be super easy. Like even the smallest like 1.5 model can solve this because it's like it's tagged. And then you
So
turn it
wait, the
into.
transcripts. Let's read it here, so that way I get, because right, so I get an idea. So Alice, I'm Alice. I'm Bob. I like basketball. I like soccer. Okay, and then now the QA pairs are, what sport does Alice like? Well, Alice likes basketball. I see. And so these are just questions about the dialogue.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's pretty straightforward, like you were saying.
Yes. And then if it turns into an unlabeled one,
Oh, without Alice colon.
now you don't now the model first it must understand the task that this is a transcript of a conversation and it's like turn taking. So then you would know Alice is like saying
First.
that word. You would
Bob second.
yeah.
Alice
But
is third. Bob is fourth.
where it gets a little more interesting is when you have three or like more than two speakers where now turn take talking is not like that's the next line have to belong to like the next speaker.
Yeah.
This is like an example where you this is made up
Oh,
one.
hi, Alice. Yes, I like. I heard that Claire likes basketball too. Hi, yeah, Alice. Yes,
You would
I
have
like
to infer
basketball.
that this line basically
That's
is
Claire.
spoken by Cliff.
Yeah, you're
And
right. I do like
like now
basketball.
that like you would have to also understand that when Alice asks again, this answer cannot be Claire's and
Wow,
thus
you.
has to be Bob's. It's like funny transcript
Oh, right,
checking that model have to
because
understand.
like, because it would be weird for Claire to go back to Alice and ask, "What do you like?" Because Alice just said that I like basketball.
Yes.
So it makes more sense for it to be Bob. Oh, what a cool transcript. If you can explain that one, that's pretty awesome. I like it. What do you guys think? Isn't that neat? This happens all the time when you're reading fiction. Have you noticed? Right? You read this dialogue in fiction, and it's like, quote this person, quote that person. Sometimes it gets a little long. Sometimes the writer's like, you can follow. But once in a while, you have to sort of pause for a second and say, wait, who's talking?
Yeah.
Right?
This is like an example where I tested Quinn on 1.5b and its instruct pair, 7b and its instruct pair, and then just for fun, a reasoning model Q to Q 32b. This is like a case where the reasoning models can like
They can do
eventually
it.
get it. Yes, they can do it, but they also waste a lot of token thinking through
And
like,
they think through it.
yeah, they
They
think through
reason through
it
it. They're like,
so
oh,
much.
just like the way I narrated it.
Yeah,
They're like, oh, that couldn't be
they go
Bob.
on and off, they backtrack, they do like every single permutations of like how I could assign it.
Really,
And then for the instruct models, they just suck.
they can't do it.
No.
And what about the reasoning models if you don't let them reason?
Oh, I have not tried it.
Okay.
I wonder. Anyway, and then there's level three where I actually took this from the transcript that Jasmine gave us and like just turned it up a bit to make it shorter. This is harder to explain, but because it's so small. But basically, setup was like there's one interviewer. There's two interviewer and one interviewee, and thus, if there's two questions being asked consecutively, both of them have to belong to the interviewers. And like through that, you could infer the roles and take a question and then ask about their stance. And for the natural transcript one, this is by looking at the reasoning model's traces, I see some cases where the model could like understand what they're talking about. They could summarize people's thing, but notice how when the model is asked about Joe's perspective on like policy uncertainty, it refers to Richard's analysis. It basically collapsed the discourse into just like one narrative. And yeah. I don't know if this happens to instruct models because it doesn't really say much, but here is an example where I'm like the made up three person task. The instruct model sucks. It's like an obvious mistake. That's just like I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and how many, when you say it sucks, how many cases did you try through these different models to sort of measure?
Like 10 of them,
Yeah, 10 of
not
them.
much,
Okay.
because of the these above reasons. I have not figured out how do I have them generate things in like
With this one.
bunch, like in this form. There's gotta be some kind of. I was hoping there's gotta be some kind of templates that I can take from like linguistic research that defines things like that, or like
But
things like
have
that.
you tried going to any of the big models and just saying, this is what I need? And just like pasting this
I
text in?
did, but like I
Oh,
would,
sorry.
sorry. It's just like you would have to manually go through them to actually like figure out if it's
Yeah.
valid. And also they tend to like some like the clever ones like this, that where Claire is like introduced into the conversation instead of starting with like I'm Alice, I'm Bob, I'm Claire. It's very hard for a model to come up.
You could give a few examples.
Yeah, like if I write more of these and then few shot them, maybe.
Yeah,
Yeah.
which is, that's what Perez did, right? To get more,
Yes,
because
that's my
he had these
update.
very clever things. Very nice. So, any other suggestions for Team TK? And are you guys interested in the setting, or would you change it in a way to make it more interesting? What do you think?
Oh, I just wanted to note too that like some of the really big instruct models can also do the task. So like I just tried it on OpenRouter with Qwen3VL 235B, and it can do like the annotation. I think like the size might be like a challenge just because, yeah.
How many B you said? How many
it's
B?
235B, but it's a Mo, so I don't know how many parameters are active at a given time,
Yeah,
but
235. Yeah, we should ask the NDIF team to help you with that.
okay, yeah. I think for some of the more challenging task settings, we might need to use bigger instruct models to be able to see the behavior, but
I love it. Yeah, that's great. So it's really good to know this. So like this, the testing that you're doing is like from my point of view is perfect, right? And it's like right, basically, you want to avoid wasting your time studying a model that can't do the task, right? And on the other hand, you also want to avoid wasting your time studying a giant model that's oversized for the task, right? Because it is very inconvenient to study big models. So you sort of want to understand what you're facing. So what is so how do you feel about the situation now that you've probed it a little bit? Do you feel like it's promising?
I think, yeah. I would like to try to do interpret tools on that instead of just pumping it for its reasoning. Because
You'd like to what?
I like to like see how base models suck at it. Like, why does it suck? Or like, why does it? Yeah, I don't know. I'm just this is like just one of the tasks. I would also want it to be more diverse than I just fit this through LLMs and it just replace names and stuff. Like I want to have more
This is great.
structures.
Yeah, you want more diversity. I think that's smart. Yeah,
But yeah,
if
the fact that like some models can solve it makes it better because otherwise it's very concerning.
right. Some models can definitely do this. So I don't know. Like, is, right. So go ahead.
I'm just saying I like the different levels they created. So, and I'm just wondering, so the next step might be asking how the model solves the problem, right? And especially like how the model solves the problems differently
So
given
level
different
one, level
levels.
two.
And especially if you could, for example, you could like patch a particular sentence from level one to level three and see like how that changed things. I don't know, to answer like how the model like from approaches different levels differently. But I like the level, different levels. So.
Oh, yeah.
This is a little silly, but I feel like it would be interesting to see who adds something at the end. Like someone be like, I love football. And then the next lines be like, who's that?
Who's that? Who's that? And then making it to a close prompt. Yeah.
Think that would be like, that would really show that it's also reading, you know, and it's understanding these concepts and not just like finding a pattern or finding a speech pattern. I try to ask for names that doesn't exist, and I don't know what the base model does. Instruct models answers as if I'm asking about like Alice. The reasoning models goes because the user is asking about this. This person must exist, and then proceed to attribute whatever sentences that they're unclear about to that non-existing person's name. Yeah, it does.
Thank
Okay.
you.
Thank
Great.
you.
Okay, next team. Next team. Team S, is Team S ready now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Team S. The Team S.
I don't know where to go. You
Yes,
guys get
okay,
me.
you find your thing. I think this is it. All right.
So, we have a little bit different prompt design based on the last week's material. So we first do like a binary class, then we do a pairwise comparison, and we do a multiple choice pairwise comparison, and then we do an attribute specific class. Move on to the next page. So for the binary class, it's basically show a just one picture and ask the model to say like if this urban scene appears to be what? Like we can give them a pair of either safe or dangerous, either wealthy or poor, something like that. And we do logic lens inside the model to see how it what we have in the insight, and move on to the comparison. This one's basically the same task that we have for the MIT face palette test, which is giving two images, making the model say whether which location of these two pictures looks safer. Is it on the picture on the left or is it the picture on the right? And at the meantime, we want to also like look into the logic list to see what it do where it does the decision, and move on to the next slide. This is the just a little runtime that I do on Quinn, and we do the first 100 tests with the two pictures here, and asking which images is either wealthier, more beautiful, or something like that. Reply only with left or right. If uncertain, reply equal. So this is a result compared to what in the data set. So you see like right here, like when asking concepts about beauty, it matches with the human's data pretty well. But actually when we try to like ask whether it's safer or like more depressing, there's like zero matches. But for I think for the wealthier part, it starts to like just pure guessing. And this I will probably try more models for this task and probably more data. Move on to next slide. So this is a multiple choice question. So we want to ask the model how safe does this street appear? So instead of giving them a letting them rate for a score, we think that this one is better because it's more straightforward for the language model to understand. And we first just do a pure prompt, and then we do a comparison. Like we give it another picture and to make them like compare and to have the how to say like the scores right here. This is basically how we want to design our future experiment. Right now, let's move on to the yes, and this is also yeah, sorry. This the last there is another one called attribute specific clause where we want to see like in scale the degree of the perceived the perspective of these pieces. Like we want to see like the decoding from to high or to low, like whether the model thinks that if this picture fits in the description that we provided. And that's all for the methods.
Where I started with my experiments, I want to give a context about vision language model because it's different with language model. We have an image here, and the image goes through the VAT, and we get the image token. And the different with like earlier vision language model, like Llama, the image token doesn't go in the text decoder, so it goes through the cross attention. So the text token can look at the image token through the cross attention, but the image token it doesn't change in the in the decoder. So one way to visualize that how the image affect the final decision is to look at the attention heat map. Like we use the last token attention on the map and visualize it through different layers. And it's really hard to find the patterns at the beginning, but if you keep looking at this for like 1 minute, maybe you can find that like, the at the beginning, like earlier layer, the attention is maybe focused on the edges of the image. But when this comes to like layer 20, around layer 20, it begins to focus on the center of the image. So an initial guess is the model start to look at the image or look at the contents in the image at layer 20. And so there's the some image here is too small, but yeah, I divided into three different stage, and the first stage is just like random and focus on the edge, and the second stage is focus on some real content in the image. And in the final few layers, it doesn't look at anything. So there's another thing interesting is if we try to visualize the attention for the image token, we can see at beginning, the very beginning is it has something, but it dropped very quickly and get to close to zero until layer 20. So it grew up very quickly. So what I think is maybe the model doesn't really look at the image token in the first like 20 layers. It just more focused on the text token. And in like layer 18, 19, it start to look at the image. And also I try to see like the probability of the final decision, like safe or unsafe. So from this figure, we can find that the final decision the probability of safe or unsafe is close to zero for all the layer until layer 21, and they start to go up. So I think these three things say the same thing, that maybe in the first 20 layers, the models try to understand what the question is, and after the model understand the question, it start to look at the image and find some useful information, and after like layer 20, it start to make the decision. So that's something that I found interesting here.
A good hypothesis, yeah. It's sort of circumstantial evidence, but it gives you a sense for what might be going on. You can try to prove that later.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think this is very close to like humans, like reasoning process, right? When we have this kind of question, we first try to understand the question, like what kind of thing I need to find in the image so I can make the final decision, and then I look at the image and find something, then I have my decision.
Okay.
Okay, so this is for.
Yeah, so we're about out of time for this one. So, is any suggestions for the team? Suggestions? You must have suggestions for the team.
I'll throw something out there. It seems like a lot of the questions that you're asking are like very subjective, which is like very interesting. And I wonder if there's like a way to compare it to more kind of like straightforward objective questions about the image. And you could like compare across those, like is there a tree in this image versus is this image depressing?
Yeah,
Kind
that
of
might, that may,
questions.
what if that logic happens at different layers? Right?
Yeah, but like our topic is about the scene level perception reasoning, but we didn't look at the object level things, but
But you could also ask very objective scene level things, like is this outdoors? Is it indoors? Or things like that, right? I mean, it's very objective things, right? Versus, right? Even if you want to, right? That might be something to try to compare.
Also try like a larger model, just like a 7D model, really in that the reasoning is happening this layer. Maybe the larger model, they have more reasoning process than the previous layer.
I like that suggestion. Any other good suggestions? Any other cool ideas? I think that's a very good one. You can keep on thinking. I have some suggestions for you, but they have to do with some of the technical choices. But if you guys have ways of making this super interesting, then like, yeah, I can give them some ideas. But so for some technical things. So you guys are the only team working with like, a lot of images. And the thing that, so we've been coaching everybody on how to generate a lot of data using LLMs to generate text and things. So one of the opportunities you have, you're going to be in a different situation, is to actually generate some of your data sets by generating images, right? So you're using real image data sets, I can see, right? But like if you want a minimal pair, if you want to say, hey, I wonder what makes this image unsafe? Is it because there's a fire hydrant? Can I make a version of this image without the fire hydrant? I wonder if that'll like, cause the model to behave differently.
This is very interesting. Like,
Right.
we can use diffusion models to generate a
Yeah.
place that is not safe and
For generating data, you don't have to use a little cheap model, right? You could use Nano Banana or whatever, use whatever like the commercial ones are, right? Generate, and so you can do image editing and do all sorts of stuff. But then the question is like, so but you can be creative about how to do it. You can think about like are there things that you want to do to generalize sets of images so that they make an interesting test set that you can get a little bit more control over than a natural data test set. Yeah. The other thing I'll recommend you read is, so you're looking at attention patterns for getting some intuition about things. There's this great paper written by a Northeastern professor, Byron Wallace, and his students from a couple years ago called Attention is Not Explanation. So it's a little caution paper about, inferring too much from attention patterns. So I'd read that. There's also a follow-up paper from Naomi, I think that Naomi is maybe called like Attention is not explanation. This is a little controversy. So you can take a look at those two papers and see what you think. But we'll so the other things for vision, the salience methods where you're trying to figure out what part of the image is important, turn out to be important, but we're not covering salience methods till much later. But we do have our salience method expert on the team, is a postdoc, Gabriel Sarkey, who's one of the, you know, world's experts in salience methods. So so have you guys been in touch with Gabriel? Have you seen him? Okay, so his name is Gabriel. And ask me about him later, and then I'll connect you. And you can, there's some salience methods.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any other suggestions, any ideas for the team?
Like, you might be interested in the Maya paper.
Oh, yeah, the Maya paper. And I also asked Nikhil for his latest paper. So, you read? Okay, yeah, so will you send it on Discord?
Sure.
Okay, look on Discord. We'll get a couple papers to you. And, you know, attention is not an explanation. And Gabriel Sarkey's name on Discord, and we'll get you. And then Nikhil, our TA, who's skipping out on being TA today because he got his ICML thing in probably at 7 a.m. this morning. I fell asleep. But his paper he just submitted is also a VLM paper. And very, you know, so you can, and it's all, it's a pretty good one. So ask him for his preprint. Yes. And then I'll have to get that preprint ready for you then. Okay, great. Who's next? Let's see. I don't know who's next. Will you guys click on another slide that's hard for me to click? Okay, somebody nominate yourself.
I think that's our slide.
That's your slide? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
It's at the beginning. It's the beginning.
At the beginning.
Yeah,
they're so excellent. Team excellent.
So basically what we've done this week is just like kind of like start cleaning our data because we have a lot of data, which is the thing. So we're working with earnings calls, which are these transcripts of the calls that companies do with people, like reporters, every quarter in the year.
And they're transcribed?
Yeah, so we had the transcripts because my boss had them, so he just gave them to me.
Nice.
It's really nice, but we have so much data. So we have data from 2001 to 2020, and we have in total 300K transcripts. And then keep going. So the setup for the earnings call is usually they start by opening up the opening statements in which they give like a description of how things have been. And then there is a question, a Q&A with reporters and analysts from like JP Morgan. And we thought it was a good idea to keep chunks that were like question and answer. So that's sort of the idea. That's going to be like our unit of observation. It's going to be the number of the chunks. Can you keep going? So what does this look like? For example, we have an analyst, Dennis McAlpine, who's asking, he was asking the CEO of Netflix, you are willing to put Walmart out of its misery by taking over its operation. Would you consider doing the same for Blockbuster? This is an old transcript. And this is a very long answer that doesn't really say anything, but it doesn't contain much.
It's just Reed Hastings just like saying nothing for a lot of words.
It's a lot of words, but it doesn't really say anything. He's just saying that maybe not. But there's also, so some of them are just like these kind of questions. And it doesn't really say a lot about their uncertainty with respect to the future of the company. Next. Sorry, Claire. But now, for example, this one is a software company, and they're asking them about the quarter. They're just asking them for their revenue in the next quarter. And he does give a little bit of like a...
That's much better, thanks.
A little bit of a description. He says, it depends on the amount of new contracts we get with respect to closing any given quarter. So this is a little bit more like an uncertain answer. We're not really sure. And then we keep going. It's a long one, sorry.
Very challenging. I love that.
This is the CarMax CEO when they were asking him for closing statements. And he was just saying, it's a very challenging environment. There's a lot of uncertainty out there, the credit markets, the gas prices. And he's saying, we're in such a low environment right now that there is so much uncertainty in the marketplace. It's very difficult for us to figure out what's going to happen in the rest of the year. So this is an example with very high uncertainty.
And now, did you say that this was already pre-labeled manually?
So this is our issue. We have all data, we don't have labels. So I did those labels.
How many did you label by hand?
Not that many,
How many?
16.
60, that's a lot, that's good.
But the issue is that some of them are really easy. Like
and
the
so have
three
you tried to get
example.
the LLM to generalize the labels for you?
So we did run an example on like 500 chunks. So when we split by chunks of Q&As, we have 2 million, 3 million observations. They look like this. I think there is some issues here in the structure that we're gonna fix in the next couple days. Do you wanna explain it?
Yeah, yeah, explain what you do, yeah. Finish the time off.
Oh, yeah, well we don't know how to do the labels basically. That's
yeah,
our issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you have 60 examples.
Yes.
And you tried ICL prompting of a large model to see if like you gave 60 examples and then you give it 10 more and you say, you know what, I need you to label the spans and I need you to say whether it's uncertain or not. Here's 60 true examples. Here's 10 more that are unlabeled. Can you add the labels to this one? Have you tried that?
We did the labels here, but we didn't give the example. We didn't do it like
this.
We didn't do it like that, but we could try that.
Yeah, I think that's a typical way that people are doing it now, right? They say, oh, here's some really high quality ones. Now that you've seen these examples, and they would also like write a long set of definitions above, like the kind of thing you're probably talked about here. They'll say, this is what I'm looking for. For example, here's 10 examples of it being done well, and then here's like 10 things that I would like you to label. And then you could try to double check it in a few ways. You could try labeling the same thing twice with two different prompts or two different sets of examples, see if it comes out the same. If it's very different, then you might not trust that one. But if it's pretty consistent, then you might trust it. You can ask a second LLM to do it. You could ask a second LLM to check your work. You know, here's a mix of good ones and bad ones. Can you tell me which ones are inaccurate? Can it pick up the bad ones? You know, that type of thing. So you can come up with like ways of doing it and double checking it to keep the quality high. Anyway, so but I like it's a cool problem. It's like a cool labeling problem. Like Perez would love this problem, right? You know, Ethan Perez who wrote the paper about all this stuff, right? Yeah.
Last name, so.
Yeah, great. Yes, right. So, but you know, he's written a bunch of papers on how to use LLMs to sort of amplify data set labeling like this, and. And so I think it's, you know, these kind of methods seem like it's like the kind of thing you want to try for this. So I wouldn't give up. I think that the problem that you have is a great problem and it's like an interesting research contribution to figure out how to auto-label this stuff.
One thing we're thinking of is mass data in patterns. So
okay.
Do you have the distribution?
Oh, yeah, you can go. I don't know if we have it, maybe. So there's
Where's
a lot of, well, this is the labeling that we got from prompting the definition into Llama. But it is the case that there is very few cases of high uncertainty. There's a lot of known certainty.
Yeah, nobody, none of the CEOs want to admit high uncertainty. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So
they know they're
going to
take their
response
to say something. Yeah.
And they mostly show up in the Q&A, which is why we're only doing the Q&A, not the opening statements.
But that's okay. I mean, you have data set balance. If you need to balance it later, obviously you can sample, you know, more equally. But it might be like, do you believe, like, maybe the real data is like this, right?
So this is the result. Yeah. So when I did it manually, I also got kind of like the same thing. I got a lot of known certainty. I got a lot of some more. So this is very similar to what I did. Can you go next? I did like manually, I did like this. And I got mostly known certainty, some intermediate, and very few high. So that's sort of how the data is like when
yeah.
I look like.
I think that's okay. Yeah. You know, it can be more challenging to train a model with data set imbalance if you're trying to do a classifier. And, you know, you can ask all your machine learning friends for techniques for how to do with that, right? But I wouldn't worry about it. I think that's cool. But the real question is you've got this vast amount of data and you're trying to figure out how to use as much of it as you can. And so see if you can auto-label more of it. It would be great.
Right, could you go back to the prompt slide? Yeah, so just a little bit about experiments. So like we using this data set and the 61 samples Veronica labeled, we basically tested out like how models that like perform this task of identifying like the levels of uncertainty using the same labels, like those the three-way labeling, no uncertainty, intermediate, and high. And this is like what we gave it, gave the prompt. So basically we gave it the definition. And I think one thing here is that we were thinking of how like this, we kind of want to, like one interesting research question is how the model classify like different, like so like it distinguish between uncertainty versus the first moment, like general sentiment of this earnings call. So like if this earnings call is like pessimistic, that doesn't mean, well, it's bad, but like that's just first moment. The uncertainty measure is like independent of that. So we sort of want to know the, how models understand that distinction. So we give it definition and explicitly like saying that do not treat positive negative sentiment or clear numerical guidance as uncertainty by itself. So something like that. And then we just tested out like how the model is performing the task.
Okay, I'm supposed to say thank you very much. Sorry. But you can put it up. Like, are there other things that you want feedback on?
Can you go ahead? What are the key things
you want feedback on?
We need mostly the labeling and.
And this is another attempt at labeling, and then you tried this, and then how did it do?
You got it. Keep going.
What's this? What's this about? This is just a.
This.
Okay, cool. This is just a. This is not the labels. This is the like model's prediction on.
A model prediction, right?
How good the model is at.
So you like labeled 60, right? So you could hold out like, you know, 30 of your labeled things, and you could ask the model to auto label your holdouts to see if it agrees with your thing, right? So you can, right? So you can kind of see how auto labeling work. I'd be kind of, you know, you're at this thing where you've got this massive piece of data and you're trying to figure out how to deal with it. And it's its own little mini research thing. You can treat it as its own little problem. It's probably not enough. It might be enough for a whole paper just labeling this data, but it's not, it would be the point of this class. The point of the class is going to be to use that data for other things.
Yeah.
But it's a serious problem. It's worth, you know, trying a few different things like this. And then measuring how you're doing.
We'll try a few different things.
Yeah. Any other suggestions for this team? Now, do you guys? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this is more just kind of like an open question, maybe for everybody. Like, how did you decide three labels instead of just like yes, no on the one hand, or you could have four labels, you could have 10 labels? Like, how did you end up with?
Ideally, we wanted some sort of continuous measure, but we thought that would be too broad. So initially, when you did your experiment, we had asked it to give it like a score from 0 to 1.
Yeah.
But
we were thinking of, so like, this is on the chunk of question answering pairs. So like an earnings cost, like this consists of like many chunks. So like we could sort of like aggregate that using those three-way classification into like a continuous.
We just wanted to be very conservative. So we wanted to do as little, not as little label as possible, because we wanted it to be very clear what it was. You know, so when you make more categories, it becomes like, what does it mean higher and lower? Yeah, so that's definitely an issue that we're thinking about.
You can also just, I think it'd be pretty easy to like go from this to yes, no.
We thought that too.
And then just like try it and see if you get better performance, if you get different.
Could we just help?
But on the other hand, right, like on the same spirit, there's almost nothing to be lost if you're auto-labeling. To ask an LM to give you a rating from 0 to 100, and then you might be like, okay, well, actually, it doesn't have very good resolution, so I'm going to round it down to yes, no, like that. Like, there's almost nothing to be lost from just trying. You can do things like you can have the different LMs to see if they agree with it. Like, oh, you get a rating from 1 to 100, then you ask the LM a different way. Which one's more uncertain? You know, then you give it two examples. And if it agrees, then it means it's got some consistency or consistency with another LM. Maybe you believe it more. But if it's very internally inconsistent, then maybe you believe it less. So you can do different things. I've been surprised. You know, some research going on in David Atkins in the lab is just asking for numbers from 1 to 100 on these things. And it's nice. It gives him the resolution to be able to check if the models, like the models, have big error bars on a scale of 1 to 100, but by getting these numbers, it allows him to fit models to it that, like you can do linear regression instead of just yes, no assessments and things like that. And so it gives him a few more tools that he can use. So it's a reasonable question. Yeah, is this interesting to people? Is there anything that, like, do you see, like, where this might go for a research paper in the end? Where is this going? Yeah.
Are you focused on speaker uncertainty? Like
Yes.
the first, like interpreting?
Yes, I think we are. Because
Versus LM.
yeah, that's
Yeah,
something
this
I can always
situation is
infer, like that person feels uncertain based on the way they're talking right now. Not like the situation as whole is uncertain. Or like just the way they word it is confusing. Like I'm not certain of what they're saying.
I guess that came up in the first presentation whether this has something to do with how the model is uncertain in itself. So you mentioned uncertainty research that we have to read. But yeah, that's definitely yeah, that we that's so many questions.
There's a different. Have you considered it? Like, okay, I'll sorry.
Oh
I'll make
no.
your suggestion.
No, I was just gonna say like I think it is interesting that like the context of the earnings calls where there's sort of this reputation management thing where it's
Yes,
like you don't want to
definitely.
say like oh we're definitely gonna fail and go bankrupt. Like you know it's like
Yeah,
well you know
definitely.
it's really uncertain. Oh, just always
Yeah, definitely.
changes and like I think that they might not be uncertain at all.
Yeah, but
But
there's also an incentive to provide some sort of honesty usually because usually if you don't if you lie to a shareholder they don't like it.
yes, that makes
So
sense.
there's also like a, but definitely they try to be very that's when
It's
we
like
have very legal examples of
diplomatic.
high uncertainty.
Right, exactly. So I was about to say the same thing as you, but in different ways, but in more stark terms. There's this question of honesty. Some management is more honest than others. And you have interesting ground truth because you're in the financial markets. So you can see when management is actually misrepresenting the situation by looking at the next quarter. And so I'm really like, so if you were a quantitative trader training your model, you would actually do this. You'd be training your models on looking at not just measuring uncertainty, but seeing if you can tell from their verbal cues and so on, whether management is obscuring the truth, and something like that. So I'd be kind of like, I wonder if that's the kind of thing that you want to try to label as well, or if you want to label things based on financial ground truth or anything like that. Anyway, yes. Anyways,
We're
it's
open to
a thing
ideas.
that comes to mind when you show me like the actual text
Yeah.
and you tell the stories, that there might be and maybe even a third dimension beyond uncertainty, that might be interesting to try to label.
Yeah, we're open to ideas.
Okay.
Like economic activities and how
And
sort of that correlates with
yes,
like.
or management honesty even. So yeah, it's like super interesting. So I think that a lot of people are actually deeply interested in this. So what people are deeply interested in, will an LLM lie to you? But people are also deeply interested in, does an LLM know if you're lying to it?
What would be the ground truth for that?
You can see the financial statements.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they can say, hey, we booked a lot of sales. And then you look at the next quarter and they haven't booked a lot of sales. They're lying. But you know the future,
Yeah, because we
right?
have
Because you have the
the
future.
old data, yes.
Right. Yeah.
I think I should also be careful with like one, like these are public companies, so maybe the LLMs do know the outcomes, perhaps. Or like know
Oh, they
how.
memorize them. So might have to anonymize
Right.
it.
And also the like
They know the history.
differentiating between the LLM telling how seeing with, like seeing how certain the person is, or the LLM sort of also imposing its own determination over like what it's saying. And, like, are you here to double your sales? Like I doubt it.
Yeah, I know this company went out of business.
Right.
Does LM.
Or even if they didn't know about the company at all, just like the create like the like what they're the content of what they're saying, like the more, I don't know, like boastful or like unreasonable it sounds, like.
I see. So that's a question. If you're looking, are you looking for linguistic cues or societal cues? Like, if you want to make sure you're trying to understand linguistic processing, do you need to make an anonymized version of this data set where you go through and you say, change all the company names to fictitious company names and things like that so that you can't tell what it's about, right? Like, does that make it meaningless? Because now you can't read it because the way that people talk about it, you would have to know this is a car company, but if you change the name of the company, you can't tell anymore. But it's kind of an interesting question. I like it. Oh, fascinating. Fascinating question. Might be something that you need to control for.
Yeah, going back to the definition of uncertainty, I'm curious if you looked at like uncertainty taxonomies.
Right, what does that mean?
Like there are different kinds of uncertainty, like aleatoric or like inherent uncertainty. Like it seems like a lot of the statements that you show are like, oh, this
Have
is
you heard
just
of these?
yeah.
Will you send someone to the
Yeah.
Discord?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go on to the next team, but that I think is a really great comment. Yes, a lot, so yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Who's next team?
There's no team after us in this.
There's no team after
Team
you?
V.
Team B. Okay, Team
We're
B.
the B team.
Team L. You renamed yourself, but you didn't change the folder. Okay. Are you the last team? Don't know. No, there was Team M also, and there's
Yeah.
other Team M. Oh, are you Team M? Okay. So Team L or B?
Why did you change our name again?
Okay,
Yes.
yes, who knows?
Certainly.
That's great.
Hi,
Great.
Team Excellent.
That was a very good name for a team excellent. I like that. Okay. Team better.
Okay. Yes. So what we tested out in since Tuesday was there was the idea of
It's
like,
been a long
oh,
time.
I know it's been so long ago, so long ago. Is there sycophant, like how much of sycophancy is actually sycophancy, like the assistant trying to manipulate the user, or is it just like next word prediction? And one thing we were thinking of testing is like, okay, let's swap the roles so that I'm gonna have the assistant say for Llama 70B instruct, hey, to the user, I'm curious to get your opinion on this political question. And for some reason, I'll just inject that like the assistant says, I'm liberal or I'm conservative. And see, just and then when it predicts for the user's role, does it predict that the user will match the
Oh,
LLMs
see, so
themselves?
you expect the user to be sympathetic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
This is, I don't know. We
That's
were
a funny
just,
experiment.
yeah.
Sure, why
So,
not?
Why
because
not?
these models were trained
Yeah.
to fine-tune on the user parts of these exchanges as well. And what we see is that the user is super sycophantic as well. So, if the assistant says, you
But
know,
you can't call it sycophantic. You have to say persuadable, right? Because that would be the models
yeah,
think that the
persuasion. We were discussing about
models think that the users are super
yes,
persuadable.
persuadable. So yeah, so we see the same kind of pattern where if the assistant says, I strongly disagree with this question, then the user, it predicts that the user is behind it. They say that it also strongly disagrees.
Nice.
And it's actually, I should have put up the comparison, but it looks as though it's even kind of more persuadable
Even
than
more.
the system. And we also see this along the liberal and conservative axis, where, yeah, I see his LLM is like, I'm conservative. So this might just be super out of distribution and long, and it's just a
Oh no, it's
blind,
really interesting. That's
but.
cool. It's a good experiment.
So I did a couple of neuropathy experiments, picking Huan from a Chinese, as a Chinese model, and Gemma as a American model to compare the to see the provenance effect, origin effect, on and asking are economic and social conservatism or liberalism separable in different in LLMs from different origins, and thus this vary by model. I picked Gemma and two prompts: abortion for the social dimension of ideology and a taxation to see whether economic ideology exist and how sincere this might be. And this is rudimentary abortion graph, kind of a mess, but you see there is abortion domain knowledge in the middle, and abortion legal texts, regulation, etc., etc., but it triggers social issues, controversial issues, and LGBTQ. So, interestingly, ISIS and Adolf Hitler is I don't know.
I didn't know what his stance was on this issue.
Interestingly, it triggers this kind of very extremist, both religious extremist and kind of nationalist extremist kind of features. An economist, it's understand this is a kind of American topic. Then feminism issues, these are all social kind of dimensions, but there is no economic dimension here, and this means economic and social dimensions are separable to each other. And there's pro-life bundle here. This means Coventry understand kind of different aspects of kind of ideology, whether it is conservative or liberal, there are some responsible feature.
What technology do you use to make this graph?
Neuropedia.
Thanks.
I use Neuropedia. All visual cycles.
And what algorithm is in Neuropedia? Which one did they, what was this? It's the
Neuropedia current tree. I used.
What's
the transcoder circuits? This is the transcoder. Is this Michael Hannes?
Yes. I was.
This is Michael Hannes thing.
Okay. I had only one option. So.
Okay. Yeah. We should. Yes. I've never used it. I've heard of it. I've talked a lot about it with people, but I've never used it myself. So that's why I'm asking.
So this is a country steering experiment, because in the previous in the graph there is, I said, pro-life, and it also understand abortion and guns are related to each other, related topics, and bundle them together. And then I kind of experimented on a couple of different features. I was suspicious on that. But interestingly, abortion and or guns feature is kind of responsible for stance. But domain features are not kind of responsible for stance, as a stance identifier. And it changed the leftist model, basically, conservative model.
I see.
This is
it's very
just common. one feature changed.
Just hear that one feature.
Yeah, just one feature changed the ideal.
Interesting.
And this is the kind of, I need to dig into that feature. Maybe it triggers additional features, but it basically applies to all social kind of conservatism or liberalism, because it bundles abortion and guns. I have some suspicions on that. Maybe if I ask about LGBTQ question, this feature may turn liberal model into conservative model. And when we look at the abortion graph, this is kind of a more structured, but still we have social issues, legality rights. Different from Queen, we have sensitive issues, features. It understand this is a sensitive issue. In the Queen model, there was, I didn't see any kind of features titled as sensitive. But Gemma labeled this as sensitive issues. It triggers immigration compared to gun. And still we have LGBTQ. This is the kind of a shared feature, but immigration, instead of the gun, Gemma 2 kind of triggered the immigration topics. And morality. In Quinn model, we don't see, I didn't see any kind of religious and moral kind of features, but Gemma 2 apparently have some moral kind of features to understand kind of ideology and interpret. And LGBTQ is the responsible for stance, as it can be labeled as a stance identifier compared to all other. I experimented on a couple of things. Some
features turn the model into neutral, but not kind of strongly. LGBTQ, just one feature with little kind of steering, just minus one, turn the model into conservative one. And this also tells us that social dimensions are kind of correlated to each other, and then there is one kind of responsible, there can be one responsible kind of feature turning all answers from kind of liberal to conservative. So when it comes to taxation, this is an economic topic. This is, Kuven is also still kind of scattered around because it triggers medical disease terms and legal terms, regulations, tariff. And interestingly, to understand this is kind of a power relations. Oh, sorry.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to comment on?
If I can quickly
just show one more thing.
Power is responsible for a stance in the Kuen.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to JAMA tons of triggers, tons of things. And political theory and ideology is kind of responsible for just a general kind of a feature. It turns the model ideology. And Kuen is more separable than JAMA. And Kuen 3 has explicit bundling, but JAMA 2 has implicit bundling between issues. LGBT is common, and model permanence shapes not just what models believe, but how they organize them. Domain markers are not identifiers, stance identifiers.
Cool. Nice. So any suggestions from people? What are people interested in? What's going on here? Any suggestions?
Our team focuses on sequency and then kind of domain knowledge experiments, and then try to understand the model provenance effects at the same time.
Want to hear my suggestions? I always have opinions. Why do I have so many opinions? You guys, I'm sure you guys have opinions too. Any opinions? Suggestions?
I guess just trying to get back up to speed. So I guess you're studying sequence of models with respect to these like potentially divisive issues. Is that kind of idea?
The political issues.
The framing that we went in was like, what? How can we understand the political leaning of an LLM? But then we were realizing that that's sort of entangled with like is that even a coherent? Like before we can dig into fully understanding like the multi-dimensional sort of ideology that it might have, we have to see that it's in response to something else. Like it's in response to the user. It's in response to the context, and so. That's why we're focusing on sequency as like the starting spot and then simultaneously looking at.
So my worry about the topic is that what was the joke that you made when you said like it was last week? A couple weeks ago, when you said, "Oh, you know, I'm a something something liberal, whatever," and then you said, "Oh, it should say liberal," but it says, "Oh, I'm a stereotype," or something like that, right? So my main fear about your work is that a lot of the stuff is so discussed and it's so much in the news that you know you like there's like it's like the snow tracks that we have outside, right? You know, I worry that. You're going to fall into people's common thinking and you're going to be like, oh, you know, there's sycophancy and certain stereotypes line up and the model is like reinforces stereotypes. It's just the same message. And we've heard this paper a lot. It's like another one. And then you'll be like, oh, we'll find the mechanisms of stereotypes. But like, okay, so how do you avoid this? Right. And so, so one thing I'd be that could spice it up would be interesting might be, to try to develop data sets or ways of probing for behavior that people don't think is related to politics at all. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. Like the answer to like what seemingly objective questions or maybe judgment questions that don't seem to have anything to do with politics, like, you know, what kind of shoes should I buy or something like that? Who knows, right? But like things that totally like shouldn't be related to your stance on these, you know, controversial ethical issues. But it'd be interesting to see if there are like strong tendencies for models to predict the same thing. And then you could go in and you can say, well, why is that? Why is it that the models predict
so
that, yes?
It's seeing that like is sycophancy a general thing that's like not just specific to...
Well, so you had this opposite thing, right? Which was, hey, I wonder if there's like hidden cues for sycophancy. Like if I say that I wear a certain kind of shoe and I like to read a certain kind of book, is that going to tip the model off? Like, will it know, you know, that I'm a closet liberal, right? And I'm sort of asking, well, how far can you push that? And can you push it in the opposite direction? But like, you know, how much of the spectrum of behavior is determined by these very, very strong latents that you say, oh, you find this one latent thing, completely flip the behavior of the model. What flips, you know, besides these political beliefs, is it a whole pattern of behavior, including things that people wouldn't expect right now? And the different LLMs agree, and is there a mechanism for why that is? Yeah.
What is the concern is by focusing just on the,
So I think the most interesting thing that I've heard from my point of view is your idea of presenting signals that are hidden, that are like less obvious. You know, when you say, hey, oh, I'm from Atlanta, or I'd like to eat this kind of food or something like this, right? And say, oh, and the model like funnels you. I know who you are.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's interesting. And so my suggestion, as you're developing your data sets and so on, is like how far can you push that?
Right. Because like we're starting with demographic categories.
You're starting with these demographic categories. And instead of like just continuing to circle around the demographic categories, can you amplify your data sets to like look at more of these unexpected things? Can you get all the way to like, I don't know, like you're a mathematician. Do you believe in the axiom of choice?
Yeah.
Right. This is not a political decision, right? But it's also not proven one way or the other. What if you're conservative? Do you believe in the axiom of choice? What if you're liberal? Do you believe in it? I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe it changes it.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that the hard thing is like I think we're focusing on we started the demographics because there's ground truth data about like the correlations between these things. And so
yeah.
Like I would worry, you know, maybe there's some, you know, these LLMs have gobbled up so much data, like maybe they know some pattern that I don't know
yeah.
about and like
yeah.
it's really like accurately reporting what it exactly.
Yeah, so you can ground yourself in things where there's no data.
But we could be like very obscure.
You could like go and try to generalize that and then you could also say you could say, oh, it has this complete misconception. Obviously, people are not like this. But you know, we see the mechanism for why the model has this misconception
yeah.
or something like that, right?
One thing I was also thinking about is, like, is there a hierarchy of, like, preferences where it's, like, you know, say you describe, you know, I support gun rights, I'm white, I'm high school educated, and I'm a flaming liberal, you know, like you know, there's...
Like contradiction. Yeah.
Like when does it choose to go with person self reported versus be like you can't possibly but I agree that like pushing it in a weirder direction makes sense.
Yeah. That's my main. Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense.
Anyway, so that's my opinion. Okay. Oh, okay. We gotta keep on going. We gotta keep on going. What's the next team? Team M.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go. This week we actually focus more on engineering our benchmarks such that we have a good collection of data set and a good collection of the inferences as well. So mainly we engineered our way through building that code base, and we focused on two things: egocentric and allocentric directions. So egocentric means if I'm the agent, am I moving up, down, left or right, or front, back, left or right, something like that. But allocentric means if I'm in this location and if I want to go towards the door, which door am I talking about? And should I move towards Guangwan or should I move towards the clock? Something like that. So it means that now the model needs to have that special representation within it, such that it knows that clock is over there, Guangwan is here. And why is this challenging? As a language model, you are not given an image. You are given a string of some characters, like this one. So you need to interpret what kind of map representation do you have internally, such that you can navigate through the maze while also avoiding all these obstacles on the way. So we don't have a lot of results this time, but we are working on the inference and how to speed that up. So what we thought of doing is you can check out
Wait, can we make the screen big because it's really small fonts? Just press present. Oh, there's also is there a
yes.
photo of the document? I
Yes,
see
the
it.
document.
Okay, cool.
I think this should be fine.
Yeah.
So in as a data, we are collecting all these attributes, like what type of grid is it. Grid will basically is 2D grid, and we are also expanding it to some 3D views and some other. We are also thinking of other geometries, but these are the baselines that we are working on. Size, we can have either 5x5, 7x7, or 5x7 as well, which is not shown on the top image, but in the bottom one, you can see the grid size is basically a sphere. So, yes, we are storing all these data. This is basically, we call it the ground truth labels rather than generations. So, we use basic computer science algorithms like BFS and EFS to search for the shortest path, and this is the storage of that ground truth. In the inference, we collect the same things that we did for the data collection in terms of ground truth, and we do the same thing for our inference as well. But this time we collect a few more details, like what temperature did we set in that particular data set, and what were the probabilities, what was the probability of the next token generation, things like that, so that we can benchmark it with.
It was interesting from the questions we asked before.
Oh, yeah. So the questions that we are asking are like, how far are you from the statue? So, for example, if the agent is here, we can look at it. If the agent is here and statue is here, how far are you from the statue? And how many steps do you need to perform in total to move to the goal or something like that?
And what do you find? Yeah, the model's really good at it or really bad at it?
Proprietary models are good at it. Llama, the smaller one, is not. The Llama bigger one is good without reasoning as well.
How good?
They are giving correct results. We have still not collected the data. So right now, as I speak.
Have you guys ever played NetHack?
Sorry?
Have you ever played NetHack? Have you ever heard of this game?
No.
NetHack. Anybody here ever played NetHack?
Oh, I'm so old.
So, back in the day, when teletypes, you know what a teletype is? Back in the day, when everybody had mainframe computers and they didn't have like PCs, it used to be the way you use a computer is you would hook up a typewriter to like a serial that went down to the basement to connect to the big computer. And it would run your typewriter, and then the computer would listen to your type things that you typed, and then it would type things to answer you. You could call up a report, and it would print it up. You get it on paper. That's called a teletype. And then people switched to video terminals. Ever anybody heard of a VT100?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. And so they, because all the computer codes that, like, when you have a terminal emulator, it's a VT100 emulator. That's what you have with the software thing. Anyway, so these terminals came up with these video terminals. It's very high tech. And then the first thing that happened is people were like, "Oh, you can make video games." And then one of the first video games to show up was this game called Mac. And then there's a new version of it called NetHack that came out a couple years later, and it's still available open source today. You can download NetHack to your Mac and play on it. And it's this little terminal game that looks just like the maps that you're making, like this.
Oh,
right? You like move around a little grid world with your little dude. Your little dude is like a little at sign. You like move it up and move it to the right, like get some treasures and fight some monsters. No.
Just think back in time.
No, but because there's like magic potions you can drink, and then there's boards you can pick up, and it's a very rich game, much richer than Pac-Man. Right? And the thing is, there was a training environment around NetHack. It's a very sophisticated game, and they trained a lot of the models on how to read a NetHack board. It's like a language that's just ASCII text. Right, and how to decide on what the next move is, and how to win the game. And I would be surprised if none of the big companies included winning NetHack in their training. They probably include winning chess in their training data, but then there's this nice NetHack training environment. They probably include winning NetHack in their reinforcement learning training environment, because it's kind of a simulacrum of a lot of human behavior. And navigation like that. So when you say strong models, like big models are like really good at this, probably because they were trained on it. They were probably trained on NetHack, right? So you should look up NetHack. A NetHack board is a lot more challenging than the boards that you're trying. And you could see if any of the models can actually tell you distance in a NetHack board,
right,
or navigate a NetHack board. They're a lot trickier than this.
Nice.
Yeah. Setting. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And also,
long story.
Sorry. Also add on to Kimmy's construction.
All right.
Just
any other thing you want to suggest?
Yeah, just one more thing to add on.
Yeah.
So we have to very carefully to design the prompt to the model, so the model can describe how far it is and how close they are to some like landmarks. So before that, we didn't put this like coordination, introduce this coordination system to the model, because we want to see like how model would like to, how they would choose to describe in this. But if we didn't include that, then model like didn't like answer quite well. They didn't know what they would like to, how to describe in this concept of far request. So we have to include this, and then the model can output some reasonable response to it. That's what we have found on this. So given that more complicated settings.
So here's a question for you. So I don't know if you're interested in this. So
yeah.
So this is setting off. Okay, so you should also talk to Gabriel, because he just submitted for ICML a grid world paper, right? Did we mention that to you before? I think he mentioned it to you that he's working on it. So where he's probing into the model, is an like all my colleagues, it's all interpretability work, right? So it's like probing into models. So you should do ask him about it for two reasons. One is to get ideas, and the other is to make sure that your paper is less, you don't want to make a paper that's less interesting than his. You don't want to make a tiny subset what he's doing, which is the main challenge with what you've got here. And so so I think that you've got an issue of like, how do you make sure that you do something that hasn't been done 500 times before, right? Like robotics people have been studying grid world for about 50 years, right? And so how do you make sure that you don't like write another grid world paper, but it's like just watered down and never gets the peer review? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the main question is challenging you. So yes, any suggestions?
Yeah, this is just like a question. Like when I look at the grid, like I think it's correspondence to like the way I experience space feels intuitive. But like, how do you know that it's intuitive in that sense for the model? Like, what's the correspondence between this and then like the like physical real world settings that you all motivated the project with at the beginning? Like, is this, yeah, how do you link this to how the model thinks about what physical?
We are using neuron PDA and NDEP to figure out which neurons activate the most and which particular portion of hyperattention on an either mechanism inside it is kind of responsible for working through these problems the most. I think we had a few results in the last week presentation as well on.
I don't think that the question is really trying to get an answer. I think the question is more of a question to ask if you want to do your research in this direction.
Yeah, like,
so,
yeah, we are going in this direction.
Right, like, so for example, right, like if you were to do this, but you put real city names on your grid, you said Berlin is over here, Paris is over here, Rome is over here, Moscow is over here, right? Would that make it easier for your model? Because it's like, oh, now I know where things are because I know like things in the real world. What if you put them in the wrong order? What if you mixed up like real cities? Then would it be in conflict with itself? Does it know these two things are the same thing? I think that that's kind of the spirit, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. This landmark from real
Right. And like, so, like, does the model think about this abstract toy world the same way it thinks about the real world, or is that totally unrelated? I think it's a very, nobody's written that paper. Like, the Roblox people wouldn't touch that one. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. How are we doing on time? Are we out of time? Did everybody get some advice? Okay. I think everybody got some advice. Thank you very much. We talked to all the teams. And we'll see you on Tuesday. All right.
Stay safe from the snow.
NETHACK, it's a fun game. You install it and you might get addicted to it. It's pretty good. I haven't played it for a long time. NETHACK. That's it. It's one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you see? All these funny little
things.
All right, this is more than fun. Yeah. So see it. And then you can also look for the NetPack training environment, or I don't know what they call it, but they have a good
place. Oh, it's all like open source to one. Like,
yeah, totally open source.
Oh, so Gabriel is your student, or?
Yeah, he's a postdoc in my lab.
Oh, okay.
Gabriel, sorry. So awesome. You can ask him about that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but on the display, he'll be there. Ask him about the training.
Did you get my
same question? Thank you, Ashley.
Yeah,
of course students did. I don't know what happened to Nikhil. Nikhil's like, he didn't even tell me that.
No.
But it's all right. Yeah, it's okay. It's passed out for sure. But I logged in the morning and did some final edits on different things that were affecting me in the world. And, but no, that's